Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And welcome to another episode of Mostly Lit. I'm really excited about this one. I have to introduce other people.
Yes, there's other people here too.
There's other people here, you know, apparently. So obviously it's your girl Ray, and I'm joined by my amazing co-host,
Derek Owusu.
And our third limb is unfortunately not here today. That's his loss because he's missing a really great guest. So I hope you're having fun wherever you are, Alex, and we hope to have you back soon. Before we get started, can the guest introduce herself, please?
Okay, hi. I'm Hayobami Hadibayo.
Hello, and Hi. Who are you? What do you do?
I'm a writer, apparently. it's been brought to my attention that I am. So I'm the author of Stay With Me, and that's about it.
Oh man, she's really not done herself justice.
Thank you for joining us. Honestly, no, it's a great pleasure. We've wanted you on the show for a very long time.
Very long time. I think the first time I like read the book, I was like, okay, well, yeah. I want to slide in her DMs on Twitter and be like...
Didn't I give you a signed copy of the book? Because I went to watch you talk. Mm. I went to one of your talks at Waterstone in Gower Street.
Oh, you were there?
Yeah, I was there, yeah.
That was the very first event I did.
Yeah. Oh, really?
For the book, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think the book came out maybe like 3 days before that event.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
So, how was it really like doing... Ready.
How did I do?
It was good. It was great. The readings were great. The conversation was good, you know.
Okay.
So, I couldn't tell that was the first event you've done for the book.
So you're like a pro.
Oh, it was the first one for the book. And before then, I think I'd done just one event where I was sort of reading or speaking about my writing in front of more than three people.
Mm.
So it was... I was sweating. Yeah. So I'm glad it seemed to have gone over well.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Just seemed like a pro. Mm. Didn't even mention it. But yeah.
So how's everyone? How's your week been, Ray?
My week's been great. I had the pleasure of hosting a panel for Penguin with the amazing Chidera, a.k.a. the Slumflower, who has... two amazing books coming out this year. One in later on in the summer called What a Time to Be Alone. I'm really excited about that.
Me too. I want to read it.
The cover is amazing.
I love the cover. The cover is great.
Exceptional.
The cover is Slum Flower.
Literally, absolutely. This is it. It's just powerful. It's colourful. It's everything.
I love the cover.
So her and the author of Plus, a sort of body posy blogger, plus size model, her name is Bethany Rutter, and two very incredible women. And I had the pleasure of like hosting a panel on what it means to look good as a woman in the current world that we live in. And the turnout was brilliant, like sold out event. Just it was just a really great intellectual place to be in, so I really enjoyed that. And like it's obviously International Women's Week, so there's loads of like things been happening of surrounding women and a celebration of women.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah, how's your week been, Derek?
It's been all right, actually. Yeah. I saw my little brother. He came down from Coventry.
Yeah.
From uni.
Did he talk to you this time?
Yeah, he's talking to me now. It's strange because he will go away and I won't hear from him for 6 months. I'll message him. I'll be like, oh, I miss you. And he just ignores me.
Oh,
and
bad.
It's
young
horrible.
Adult.
In my head, I'm thinking, you don't know how much it burnt me even to write, I miss you. And for you to ignore me now. But yeah, he's calmed down. And
yeah.
I saw him, which was good. He's sorting himself out, which is fantastic. You know, I'm glad he's gone to uni. And Coventry is, you know, it's a decent uni right now. It's not like it was before.
Yeah.
It's really climbing up the league tables as well. So that was good. And then, other than that, just...
been chilling.
Chilling, writing, reading.
I haven't read a few of your like writings in a while. You've been silent in writing. Before, you'd be sending me your stuff. But now you've got the confidence now. You can't be like, oh, Ray, like, can you look over my stuff? Now it's like, okay, I'll just, you know, send this out. And then I'm like, see a link. Oh, Derek Arusu has written. I'm like, rah. Like, I didn't even get to read this one.
No, but I usually send you my fiction. If I'm writing something that's like an opinion piece, I don't tend to give it to people because I don't care that much about the writing.
Okay.
It's when I'm writing about people and descriptions and things like that. Like, I heard this amazing quote from Californication where he's like, I can't tell the ridiculous from the sublime. I can't either when I'm writing. I might write something and think, this sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Someone else read and say, this is corny. You need to change it.
I get that, honestly. Like, so I'm writing a piece, like a black Muslim woman piece on like identity and stuff. And the first time I wrote it, the first like part, I was like, I'm amazing. I'm an amazing writer.
Oh god.
Nobody can come to my level.
If we all had this confidence.
This right? Feeling, I was like, I'm great, right?
Oh, you've had this feeling
like,
as well.
3 weeks later.
Oh, it's usually a lie. Actually.
Right? 3 weeks later, I'm emailing Clarissa, like, Clarissa, this work is shit.
Yeah.
It's terrible. I don't like it. She's like, no, it has that. I'm like, no, it lacks direction. This was the same thing that I wrote in the beginning that I was like, this is incredible. I am a genius.
Which is why I think you should never. I don't know. I just feel like I don't want to send anything out too early. Because I feel, like I said, I mean, I've written things where I thought, oh my God, this is brilliant. And it doesn't take 3 weeks. I just go to bed and I wake up and I'm like, what is this?
Oh, God.
Like, really, the next morning, I'm like, what is this nonsense? Like, who wrote this?
It wasn't me.
I don't know.
Yeah, so...
Okay.
That's what you're doing.
How about you? How's your week been? How's London?
Busy.
Oh yeah, when did you like land?
So I got here on Wednesday, Wednesday evening. And I mean, I thought I was going to miss my flight, but that didn't happen. So that was a good thing. Yeah. But I got here on Wednesday evening. I had a bit of time to myself.
Yeah.
Then was just doing press the next day, BBC, The Guardian, and then I did Letters Live.
Okay.
I read a letter there and met some really cool people. And I'm grateful I didn't disgrace my ancestors. Collapsing.
You were on job. You were good.
But I mean, I did fangirl a bit. But
yes.
Yeah.
I don't think it was too disgraceful. I think the ancestors are fine with me right now. So yeah, it's been a pretty busy week.
Yeah.
Talking about the paperback and all of that.
Yeah. I got like the paperback at work and I was like, now I lost it. So it's that Cafe Nero just.
You lost it? Oh yeah, you just said yeah.
So I was just like planning for the episode and I was just at like Cafe Nero and I got Well, somebody has it now.
Yeah.
Maybe I can go back and get it.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
So what are you reading at the moment?
So I usually read short stories when I'm traveling. So right now I'm reading A Body in Many Parts by Carmen Machado. So I think I'm two stories in and I think it's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's that dynamic between being a writer and knowing what it takes to write and then reading? I feel like reading, once you are like maybe a solidified writer, is very different to when you just read. How is that like, how do you receive books now?
I mean, I feel like one of the things that's happened recently is that every single book I read, I'm rooting for that book. Like, I want it to be good. Because I just know that this is a lot of hard work. And if somebody, I hope they've done their work. It makes me really sad when I read a terrible book, which I didn't used to feel before.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, oh my God, this is so sad. So every step of the way, I'm like, yes. Oh, this is chapter 5 and it's still terrible. But, you know, I could turn the page and everything could get better. And I think the other thing is that when I read something that's really good, I think I've developed another level of appreciation for it. Because I realize that it's not easy. And particularly when it seems like it just flows off the page and it's just so easy. I know that,
it wasn't easy to write.
You know, like the fact that it's so, I can sink into it.
Yeah.
Somebody did the work for that to happen for me, you know. And I tend to just slide into people's DMs and say, I don't want to stalk you, but this is so amazing. I think I do that more often. I think I did that just 2 days ago to someone. Yeah. Like, your book is really, really amazing. I feel like now I have the confidence to sort of do that.
Yeah.
Because like you
where know. Before, I feel like I may just be like a stalker.
But now it's fine. Now it's fine.
Now it's like, am I Obama? Like, yeah. What do you mean?
Exactly.
Me giving you a compliment is, you know, hey, I'm just giving you your next book deal here.
What about you, Ray? What are you reading?
So I'm not reading much except for, like, obviously Penguin has like a new series of like mini little books out, and they're like light blue. I forgot the campaign name for it, actually. I'm reading the essay on dismantling the master's house using the master's tools by Audre Lorde. And I'm rereading it, actually, because I read it a few years back and I was reading it to sort of support or not support or argue my case of pornography and capitalism in how to tackle or help move forward feminism. So that is what I was using that little essay to talk about, essentially, to sort of be like, oh, you know, is pornography something that is actually that feminism can defend, or is it something that goes against it? So
it's a very polarizing argument, that one.
Yes,
it is. And so I really like that text by Lorde because it's really interesting, and it's really looking at the social structures of society and how women use it to help their cause, or how they use it to sort of take back their cause and kind of remove the freedom that the little freedoms that they have. So that's what I'm reading, and I'm really enjoying it. It's really tiny as well, so I would definitely recommend you guys to go and read it.
Okay.
How about you? What you reading?
I'm trying again to read The Lovely Bones.
The Lovely Bones?
Yeah, I'm trying
again. I think I heard you say you hated this book once.
Yes, but I didn't.
Did you say this on?
Yeah, I did. Okay. Yeah. I did. Oh, wow, you listened to the show.
What? Because I remember you said that a long time ago.
Yeah, I got halfway and then I thought the writing was really repetitive.
Okay.
So I stopped. I've seen the movie, but I want to finish.
I haven't seen the movie.
I want to finish the book.
No, I think you do, like you should. It's chilling. It's...
Oh, you've read the book?
Yeah, I've read
it. Oh, okay.
So I haven't seen the film, but I read the book.
Yeah, the movie isn't that great.
No?
It's creepy, the movie.
Yeah.
But the book is creepy too, but...
Yeah, the book is creepy. It's one of the few books that I find very uncomfortable. Especially, is it YA?
No, it's not YA.
I'm not sure.
Because it kind of read like YA, but a very depressing one.
I felt like because she died as a teenager.
Exactly. That's why I'm thinking, is it YA?
Maybe then, maybe. I thought it was kind of like just commercial fiction. I don't
really?
That's how I took
it. I read it as like YA, but just very...
Yeah.
But maybe reading, a few books make me uncomfortable. I think the other book that made me uncomfortable was Sylvia Plath's...
The Bell Jar.
Yeah, The Bell Jar. I recognise how powerful her writing is.
Yeah.
I read it again and I was like, you're amazing. In the beginning, I didn't really have any sort of mental health issues. And I read it after like a very hard time. And I read it and I was like, wow.
No, I get it.
Yeah, I get it. And I feel like that book, you have to really get it. The first time you read it, you're just ignorant because you just don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was hoping for with The Lovely Bones. Because a lot of books that I read the first time, like, wow, it's amazing. Like I've said this, like with The Time Machine.
Yeah.
Read it first time, like, amazing.
Yeah.
Read it again, I'm like, wow, this is really, really bad.
Yeah.
And even with Heart of Darkness, the first time I read it, it was painful to read.
Yeah.
The second time I read it, although I disagree with a lot in the book, I was like, wow, Joseph Conrad can write.
This is good.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. So I'm hoping that's going to happen with The Lovely Bones. Like, I'm going through and it's fine so far. So yeah, hopefully.
I've asked for people on Twitter to like send me their theses because I think I mentioned this a few episodes back. I don't really read non-fic, right? And I happen to read Richard Templer's The Rule of Life, The Rules of Life. And I was like, this is going to be terrible, but I'm just going to just get into it. And there was a rule that he wrote with regards to always making sure that your mind is open to new knowledge. And I had a bit of a moment on Friday where I was like, I don't think that since like studying, I don't think my mind has been open to new knowledge, because I'm like, everything around me, it's very cyclical and just like, okay, like you're talking about the same thing.
Let's yeah, well, that's just intellectual arrogance. Don't fall prey to that.
I know. And I feel like I had been for a very long time where I'm like, I don't really need to know anything because, you know. And so it dawned on me that I've been very closed off with new stuff. Hmm. And I've been very much like in my safe zone, you know, like, okay, I'm very comfortable with this. And yeah, you're talking about this. I know the arguments. I know exactly what you're going to say before you even say it. And it just has made me really uncomfortable. So what I'm trying to do is really read maybe less fiction or just know more about the world.
Yeah.
And I had the opportunity to go back to my old university yesterday. And I saw one of my tutors and I was like, I'm going to email you. Like, I really want a list of like new readings that are coming up. And she agreed to send that to me. And like, people have actually been sending me their theses that I've asked for. I've got like 6, I think. Yeah. So that's going to be me.
I mean, I don't know what that's got to do with Lovely Bones, but...
No, I just was like, oh, okay, like what we're reading, that's going to be me.
Oh, right, okay, forward. Okay. Like, I thought he was going somewhere.
Okay. I just want to hijack your moment, you know?
Right, okay.
So, yeah.
But yeah, Lovely Bones. I mean, I started reading it just because we read Difficult Women by Roxane Gay.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of the stories in there are really uncomfortable.
Do you have a copy?
Yeah, I'll give it to you.
Okay, good.
And so I thought, let me go back to the Lovely Bones and try and deal, because I struggle to read difficult books. Like, I really, I would say, The Color Purple, I read the first page and I was like, absolutely no way.
So I would have thought The Bluest Eye would have been something that would be more uncomfortable, because The Color Purple wasn't uncomfortable for me, surprisingly. The Bluest Eye.
The reason why The Bluest Eye, the first page, didn't make me uncomfortable, because the book is so intellectualized that I feel like unless you get really into it, you're detached from the emotional impact. Whereas The Color Purple, you're immediately thrown into it straight away.
I think then, because when did you read The Color Purple?
Oh, like a couple of years ago.
See, I read it last year or like maybe the year before that. And I felt like it was intellectualized because everyone had been talking about it. Mm. And so I didn't really read it.
Have you read those?
No, I haven't.
No, much. Color Purple? Mm-hmm. I've seen the movie.
No.
So what kind of books
I
are you into?
I haven't actually seen
really?
The movie. No.
Oh, you should.
Oh.
It's the
movie. It's the one with Oprah in it, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, yeah.
Oh. You forget.
Oh, I really forgot Oprah and Whoopi Goldberg's in it. Yeah, amazing, amazing movie.
My favorite part is Harpo.
But
who
is woman? Anyway, moving on.
I mean, I feel like it's been on my TBR for years, actually.
Yeah.
Mm.
And this might be the year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Just
we've all got those. Mm.
The year that you read all the books.
I'll read it this year. Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's get into the main
subject. So today we're going to be having a conversation with Albami. We're going to be talking about, you know, her amazing novel Stay With Me, African literature and just
West
really,
African lit. And
yeah, just really, really get into it. I mean, it doesn't just have to be West African. We could talk about Ngugi wa Thiong'o. I know you want to talk about him, so we can. You do know how I mean?
Thank you for giving me the permission to.
Ngugi wa Thiong'o, sorry. But yeah, one thing I wanted to ask off the bat is, what was the inspiration? Like, at what point did you say to yourself,
this is it, I'm
going to
write.
I can write a novel and this is what I'm going to write.
Hmm. I mean, I think, so this particular book, when I thought I was going to write a novel, I had another story. And it was a story that I think I'd had in my mind since I was maybe 18. But I knew I wasn't ready to write this book, that particular book yet. So I just kept it at the back of my mind and thought, when I do decide to write a novel, that's going to be what it is. And then when I was in my final year in university, I wrote a short story about this couple. And it was basically an argument they were having. And so, I mean, I wrote a short story. It was about 3,000 words. And I thought that was it. And for the next 2 years, it felt like they was talking me, in a sense. And I would be somewhere and I'd see somebody and I'll just think about them again.
Mm.
So after a while, I thought to myself, so then I started working in Lagos at a point. And it was my first time living in Lagos. I was born there, but my family moved away pretty early. And it's a very intense city. And I was just terrified because I realized that I wasn't writing as often as I used to. And writing is something I've been doing since I was maybe 9. And all of a sudden this year, I go a whole week and maybe I haven't read any book. I haven't. So I was really terrified, and I thought to myself, I'm going to look back in 20 years and I'm going to hate my life. So I said, I have to write a novel. This is how I will save myself from this city. So I began to write, and this was the story that was closest to my heart at that time, because for some reason they just stuck with me. I couldn't stop thinking about these two people and their marriage. So I sat down and said, you know what, I'm going to start this novel now. And I did.
Were you quite disciplined in the way you went about writing? How did you sort of manage that schedule and manage to hold yourself accountable? Because I feel like I've started so many things that I just don't ever finish.
I mean, I think one of the things that helped is that I usually, when I'm doing a first draft, I have a certain word count. So in January, I have to have 20,000 words. Whatever happens, it might be rubbish. I don't care. I just need to look at that word document and see 20,000 words at the end of it. Yeah. So I think that I give myself a lot of freedom. And I think sometimes that can hold you back. If you're trying to get it perfect the very first time, it can be very difficult. So I give myself a lot of freedom to write myself into all kinds of corners. It was unreadable by the time I was done, but I had something. It existed in the world and I couldn't go back to it again and again.
So you like do you spend more time editing than you do actually writing?
Actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
I feel like it's when I start to edit that I'm actually writing.
Yeah.
So I never feel like I've started writing anything until like I'm on the second draft. Even if it's 100,000 words. If it's just the first draft, I feel like 90% of this is going in the bin anyway. So it's when I start editing that I feel like, yes, now I'm actually working.
Yeah. You have like a strategy, you know, where this is going. No, I get that. I remember when I used to write essays for uni, it was literally like, the worst thing for me is seeing a blank page.
Yes.
If I see a blank page, I'm
bloody it's terrifying. Terrified.
So I have to write gibberish. Sometimes I'm literally like, today I'm wearing just so I can get in the flow.
Sometimes I literally just hit the keyboard. I just go and then I start writing again.
Oh, man. Wait, how long did it take you to get it done? Well, the first draft anyway.
The first draft was very quick. It took about 6 months.
Oh, wow.
I can write very quickly when it's the first draft. Subsequent drafts, I go very slowly at it. So the first draft was under 6 months. I had it. But when I even started writing this book, I thought it would take maybe 2 years because I felt, you know, it's going to take just 2 years. I'm that brilliant. But unfortunately, it was a humbling experience for me, and I'm glad I did it. So, after 2 years, it was still mostly rubbish. So I had to then restructure it a number of times. So the structure was very different initially. Initially, you had Yejide's story for the first 50% of the book, and then you went to Akin's story for the second 50% of the book, which, if you've read the book, is a very, very different novel. Because by the time you get to him, you're just like, dude, what do you have to say? And I remember reading that and thinking, no, that's not what I want to write. It's whatever his issues are, he's a person, and I want him to get that, have his say earlier on. And so I had to restructure everything. Initially, because I absolutely adore Yuno Diaz. I don't think you do. Do you like him?
Well,
I feel like I've listened to a podcast when somebody like
I was almost
outbroken.
Really? Yeah, it's probably me. I was like, wow, this man has no spine. Like, yeah, I was so
So because I loved Yuno Diaz, and I think I just read, I can't remember which story of his I'd read, which was in second person. I of course thought, you know what, I'm going to do that. So a whole half of the book was in second person, and it was terrible. So
is it hard to write in second person?
Yes, it is harder than it looks. So I had to change quite a number of things.
Yeah,
and eventually there was a book.
Yeah. So you know, with the political elements of the book, I mean, I found it interesting because it's clearly a story about family and motherhood and relationships, and it made me think that there's a, I remember reading something from James Baldwin. He says what a lot of writers tend to do is they write people and ignore what's happening and around them, which actually shapes their personalities throughout the book. And of course, a lot of the things that happen within your book as well, I mean, it's important that they're there. Even if it's not a political book, that's what was happening during that time, whatnot. So did those things just find their way into it, or did you purposely write them into the book?
So initially, because I'm a bit obsessed with politics, it was a very political book. Like, they were having conversations they wouldn't have just because I wanted to talk about those things.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the things I had to pull back, actually. So initially, there was a point where Akin goes off and joins a party. I mean, it was... because I wanted him to, not because it was something he would do. So I had to pull back on that. But there were things that I felt spoke to the time, and I think even to their relationship. Sort of, if you look at the narrative arc of Nigerians and our relationship with IBB when he came into power, how at a point people were ecstatic, like, oh, this is wonderful and all of that, and how things sort of just disintegrate. And he was like this gentleman guy with his smile and all of that.
Just for the listeners, is IBB Babangida?
Yes, okay. Yes. But so I felt like there was a kind of parallel between that and this relationship where this woman comes into this marriage and feels like, oh, you know, home my life. And, you know, finally I'm home. And then, you know, it's not quite what it looks like in the beginning.
Oh, actually, I think something... So I was wondering about, like, the superstitions in the book and how you were able to mold that through. So what I found quite interesting is the idea that, obviously, this wasn't a magical realism type book. It wasn't like House of Spirits or Garcia or whatever.
There was a little bit. I mean, the goat thing was a little bit...
was a bit wild, yes. But what I felt was, like, I felt that... So when I read magical realism, I know that this isn't real. Or I go into it being like, I'm going to allow my consciousness to really move around and play around with the words. And it's just not real. I'm entering in another sort of dynamic, another sphere. That's how I like enter books that I know are like that. But what I find a lot of the times with African narratives embedded with magic, per se... It's real. I don't go into it like, oh, I'm allowed to, you know, it's not really real. I'm like, okay, yeah, this is it. Like, I believe in it. She's going to have a baby if she breastfeeds this goat. Like, do you know what I mean? I think there was a moment where she was like, I see a newborn. A newborn is sucking on me in that moment. And I was actually just wanted to ask, like, how initially was that something that you actively wanted to do? Was, like, the idea, the superstitions with, is it mommy? And the superstitions that she held, which a lot of African mothers hold, like, my mother's always telling me don't do this because so-and-so is going to happen. Do you know what I mean? So did you initially think that that is exactly what you were going to do when she was sort of going through her issues with getting pregnant?
So first I'll talk about the goat.
the infamous goats.
The very infamous goat. The mountain of...
jaw-dropping miracles.
Do you know what's funny? When I read that, the mountain of jaw-dropping miracles, it didn't take me by surprise.
I was like, of course, yes. And I really thought, I was like, yeah, she's going to find a miracle up there and it's going to work.
So, you know, there's so many things that changed about this book, but there was... One of the scenes that was there through every single draft was that scene. And every time I came back to it, I would say to myself, it made me uncomfortable every time I read it. Because good Lord. It was so uncomfortable to read and to write. And every time I kept asking myself, why is this scene in this book? It was the one thing that I kept thinking, you know, I should take this out. But something just felt, no, this happened. This actually happened. So that's one of the stories about the goat. And then I'll circle back to it in the end. So when I was writing this, actually, I wanted to write it from the inside out. Like, from, say, the mother-in-law's perspective. I didn't want to write her. Oh, this is this woman and she believes these things. You know, I feel like there's a way you write that. from the outside. And I feel I thought that I wanted to write it so that you would see why somebody might believe this would happen. Even though, I mean, I didn't believe she would get, I mean, these things are around, but I didn't believe in it. But I felt like I wanted to write about somebody who did in a way. And I wanted it to be a journey for her to get to a point where she thinks to herself, you know what, this is it. Mm. Because, I mean, she's had all this pressure. And I feel like in that moment, she really does have an experience that feels authentic to her. Mm-hmm. So it was important to me to write it from the inside out. It was a part that I struggled with. And I think one of the things that has given me some form of satisfaction in the past year since I've been talking to people about the book is that particularly in Lagos, people have come up to me after events and said, you know what, I gave my mother this book. And she told me that before she had me, it was about 5 years. And she did some of these things. I mean, she didn't have a goat, but, you know, she came pretty close.
Mm.
And I felt, and I remember the first time somebody, and this has happened more than two times, the first time somebody said that to me, and I thought, yes, that is why that had to be in that book. Because I feel like people have been through this kind of things. And it's been the reality that they've been pushed to do things that, when they look back, they're like, my goodness, you know, and I felt like, yes, this is a sort of bearing witness, even though I wasn't really aware of it at the time. But it just felt necessary. Every single time I tell you, I came back to this manuscript, I thought to myself, come on, why is this here? But it just felt like, oh, this needs to be here for some reason. So when I spoke to that people, it felt like, oh, yeah, it was because of all those women.
I mean, what's going back to what Ray said about that magical realism when you read it in African literature, it doesn't feel like
out of place.
And obviously that's what magical realism is supposed to do. It's supposed to weave itself into narratives without you thinking this is unrealistic. Do you know what I mean? And I was just thinking, like, with, for example, obviously because of our perspectives, we're African and we hear these things all the time. Then obviously in the Western world they have different perspectives. Like,
tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
They have,
they think,
like, in terms of Christianity. So if I read a book where Christianity was weaved into it, it wouldn't be called magical realism.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
It would be just like Christian literature. Exactly. Yeah. Like books like The Giver and things like that. So I wanted to ask, in Nigeria, people who read this, when they read like the things about the goat and obviously the pregnancy and whatnot, Was their approach to it the same as like mine and Ray's? It's kind of like this. Did they even say magical realism, or were they just kind of like everyday life?
I think that's it. I think that they didn't. I don't think people have said, "Oh, this is magical realism." It's just, this is just an option that somebody's exploring. That they feel that, well, why not try this? You know, and I like what you brought up, that if someone else were writing sort of their own reality, what has become, what has been a part of their culture for centuries, whatever form of superstition it might take. I feel like because, perhaps because of sort of the cultural dominance and the fact that sacred Christianity has gone all over the world, it's just part of the literature. Even though not everything is subject to reason, you know, not everything is like you can think about it logically and say, oh, this absolutely makes sense. Mm-hmm. But there's a sense in which we've absolutely just accepted it, like, oh, yeah, this is life. So, and I think it was one of the things about this book also that I, like I said, I wanted to write it from the inside out, you know.
Okay. I mean, in terms of like your influences when it comes to this book, Ray obviously made, she quoted and said, this book is like a Nollywood movie.
Every time, I'm literally like, I'm stressed. It just takes so much.
Right?
Every day, new drama, like, okay, 1 minute. Yeah. 1 minute, I just had a baby. Next minute, oh, Fumi's dead. I was like, what?
Sorry, guys, spoilers.
Sorry. But you should have read it. Yeah. Literally, that part, I was like, hold on a minute. I was like, wait, what? Yeah, it is like...
Yeah,
did you get influenced by Nollywood films?
I mean, fortunately, unfortunately, I really don't watch movies.
Oh, okay.
At all. Really. Oh, wow. So, and people have really said to me, oh, this is very cinematic, you know, like...
Yes,
I'm just like, okay, I don't know where that is from. But I think there's something about it that's quite vivid, you know, and maybe a bit gothic. And there's a lot that happens, you know, in this very, I mean, it's not that long, but quite a number of things happen, and there's a lot of twists and turns. And I think also that because of the way it's structured, it sort of heightens that effect, the fact that you're going from one person to another.
Yeah.
And it's a story that is, they're looking back, and I feel like it's, they're both telling the story, but they both have different intents. So they're saying certain things at certain points in the narrative. Aki in particular, I think he's very calculated in the way he...
Oh, I didn't like Aki. he annoyed me. But don't know, I'll tell him, so I'm like, no.
He's really calculated in terms of, even when he's talking to the reader, he's very purposeful about what he's saying. You know, is in control. He's absolutely in control of this. And he's I feel like they're both building up to, you know, when they meet again. And they're looking back, but they're building a narrative. It's a conscious thing. You know, he's trying to justify himself in some way. Like, you know, you need to see what I had to face. You need to understand that I really loved you and all of that. So, This is it's one of the things I want to do this year. Watch more movies, actually.
We'll give you a list. We'll have a whole list that you can watch. I think
I have seen Black Panther. It's the only movie I've seen this year. So
really? Well, I mean, that's the only movie to have watched this year anyway.
Yeah, true.
But you mentioned how like it was gothic, and I actually never put that word to it until you mentioned it now. I'm like, oh shit. The part for me that was absolutely harrowing, like, was when she believed that she was pregnant.
I almost believed it.
I was so certain.
I am so happy that you almost
I was
did.
Like...
Because what? I didn't want the reader to think, oh, this crazy woman.
No.
You know, I want you to be there with her. Yeah. Like, yeah.
I was literally like, the whole time I was like, I'm pregnant. And when Akin was like, no, like, you're just stressed, please sleep. I said, wait, excuse me.
Do you know what's crazy? When there was a point where she said something like, oh, my 14th month, I was kind of like, so when's she going to have the baby then?
Yes. I remember I read that part, and I was, and the fact that I was still skeptical at that point, I was like, okay, well, this is stupid. Like, a part of me was like, you can't be pregnant, but then I'm like,
exactly.
But maybe you are, and this is a phenomenon. It's a miracle. But yeah, like that whole part was just mentally straining. I think I was very much like, what is going on here? You know. Definitely something needs to happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, there were these stories, and sometimes I think you'd see them in some, I won't call them newspapers, maybe tabloids. Woman has been pregnant for 2 years. Woman gives birth to a baby finally after 2.5 years. After 2.5 years of pregnancy. And the ones I found a bit troubling were sort of the ones they would say, you would sort of hear maybe in the salon or something, oh, there's this woman she's been married for 2-5 years. And, you know, she claims she has been she's pregnant. But, you know, we just know she's putting something on her clothes.
The calabash.
Yes, the calabash.
Yes.
The famous calabash. And, you know, I think even as a teenager, I used to think to myself, you know, but what if this woman isn't lying?
Yeah.
What if she genuinely believes that she's pregnant? So when I started writing this book, by the time all the things that start happening happen to her.
Yeah.
And she's under so much pressure. And you have to understand that many people who experience this kind of thing, it's all this intense pressure. And I sort of wrote that bit. And then I went to do some research and discovered that, yes, this is actually a medical condition that happens to women. That it's not just that you believe you're pregnant, your body behaves as if you're pregnant, but there's nothing.
Because that's when I started believing it, because her body started changing. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, wait, she is pregnant even if it's 14 months. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So my mom's a doctor, and I mean, we had this discussion where she told me that she would have patients who would tell her, you know, just do this scan again, you know, because they're so convinced. Mm. Mm. And it's a really sad thing.
Yeah. You know? All right. I want to talk about West Africa. Okay, fine. African lit in general. In terms of, like, just going back to that inspirations part, like, looking at your contemporaries that are writing alongside you right now, is there anyone that stood out in particular that you were like, okay, yes, like, there are messages in these books that I really want to put forward? Who did you think your contemporaries were, like, writing? And what did you want to take from them, or what did you learn from them, or do you know what I mean?
I mean, I feel like, I don't know if I can say who my contemporaries are, actually. I feel like that's like when somebody decides to do an anthology. Nigerian writing. But I really, really, really love Leslie Arima's book. What It Means When a Man Falls from the Sky.
Right. So everyone's been telling me to read this book.
Yeah. Alex loves it.
Alex loves it, yeah.
It is amazing.
Okay.
It is so good. So I started reading that short stories a few years back, and my goodness, she's just brilliant.
Yeah. Was she someone that you slid in the DMs to be like, this is amazing?
I have to do this, actually. I mean, I've sort of fangirled her in The Guardian, actually. It was one of my favorite books from last year.
Okay.
And I mean, when they asked me to write, oh, what were your favorite books? I'm like, yes, finally.
Yeah.
I can tell the whole world about this book. But I feel like I want to do it in person. We're on a short list together, and that means we'll get to meet. I've never met her. So I'm saving...
You're saving that excitement. I'm saving the bubbling excitement.
I really love the book, and I think everybody should read it.
Yeah.
She's a brilliant writer.
I think I might.
I'll check that out.
I am an absolute fan.
Yeah.
Okay.
So who's kind of influenced you then? If not, not your contemporaries, but in terms of like past writers and things like that.
No, I mean, by saying I don't want to talk about my contemporaries, I don't mean I don't read them. I just feel like, I don't know. I feel like I might mention someone and they'll think, no, I'm not your mate. So who inspires me? They're people that I read they're just some people that when I'm writing, I want to read. You know, Diaz is one of them.
Oh man, Alex should have been here.
So there's this book that I'm also a bit obsessed about. I feel like I talk about it in every interview. So but I'll talk about it again. It's a play, actually. It's Death and the King's House Man by Wole Soyinka. And the language is just something else. You know, it's one of those books that I just go back to again, and I just read one dialogue from the Yalodi and like, ah.
It's Death and...
The King's House Man. It's very, it's relatively cold, actually. So it's a play. I read it years ago, and it was one of those books that you read and you're like, okay, one day I want to be able to do this.
Oh, okay.
You know, and I feel like the language is good. It's something that speaks to you everywhere, but also because I speak his first language, which is Yoruba, I felt like I could understand what he was doing at another. How amazing and totally exceptional what he was doing was. Whereas somebody else who might not have access to that language yeah. will just say, oh, this is really good. And I thought, my God, this is working on like 5 levels. I wish I could explain yeah. this to you. So that's one book I really, really love. Toni Morrison's Beloved is also one.
Really?
Yeah.
Also, I have a thing with Toni Morrison.
Oh, what is it?
I just think she's really difficult to read.
I enjoy difficult people.
I really like, honestly, like The Bluest Eye took a lot out of me.
Have you read Beloved?
I read half of Beloved and I put it down. I said,
please,
it's so, like,
finish it. Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, that it's visceral, but yeah. I think that's one of the things that's powerful about it for me. And I think that she's such a genius. There's a point at the beginning of the book, I think sometime like in the first 50 pages, where she moves point of view about 7 times on a page. And you don't notice.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're just going. I think you're like, no, wait. My goodness, how is she doing this?
7 times.
Yeah.
I only remember the one time that Achebe done it in Things Fall Apart at the end, where he shifts perspective and goes very colonial. Right at the last page. And that's why I remember thinking, when I finished that book, being like, that's exceptional.
Yeah.
Because one moment, we just flip the pages and history has turned. So Toni Morrison did that 7 times.
See, that would frustrate me. I would be reading. I'll be reading it. Oh God, it would actually do my head in. I'll be like, who's talking?
Yeah.
What's going on?
But I feel the thing that was wonderful about it is that you don't actually really notice that it's happening. There's just, it's like you're just pulled into the current. And it's this thing where you're trying to read like a writer that makes you think, oh wait, I have to see what you did there. You know, like, what? How did you do it? Did you carry over an image? I mean, what? I need to take this apart.
Yeah.
You know? So she's somebody I read for that. Like, okay. Not that, I mean, it's not easy to do, but like, I just want to, like, you know, there's this thing I do when I'm writing where I put all the chapters on the floor.
Yeah.
I want to take a book and tear it out and put everything on the floor. Like, I have to figure this out. So yeah.
But you were writing, what were you writing about at 9 years
at
old?
At 9 years old, okay. So, So at 9 years old.
I was not writing, I was writing song lyrics at 9 years old. Ah. Thinking I would become a singer.
It might still happen.
Oh no, definitely not. It's definitely not happening at all. No.
Oh God. So at 9, I was, so I was in secondary school. I was one of the youngest students in my class. I was not particularly sociable or I was very quiet. And that meant, and I feel like I many of my friends were very assertive people and very witty. There was an argument and someone talked to me in a way I didn't like and I couldn't say anything, you know. I was just like, okay. And then I got home
And I just
thought about all the things I could have said.
Yeah.
You know? And so I wrote them down. And then I remember I had a yellow notebook where I wrote this down. And I did rhyme, you know, I rhymed everything. All the insults.
Yeah. You're rhyming the insults. Oh, man.
Oh, my goodness. And then after that, I felt like that experience was just so, like, it felt so cathartic that I just kept doing this, you know.
I do that in the shower. You know, when, like, you think about all the conversations that, or like the responses that you could have, I do them in the shower.
All the time.
Yeah, I think maybe I should start writing them down.
I feel like it still happens at the end of a day.
Ah.
Like, when I'm in bed tonight, I think, oh, I should have mentioned this writer. Why didn't I think about that?
Yeah.
You probably do that after this recording.
Yeah.
Just be like, oh, damn it, I should have mentioned.
I was writing poetry, and then after a while, I started writing short stories. So what was I writing about? I was writing really depressing stories, actually. There's one I remember where somebody sort of goes up in flames at the end of the story. Yeah, so not very cheerful.
Was this magical realism again?
Yeah, a little bit.
And then he just lit up in flames.
Yeah,
and then I think my mother was a bit worried because she was reading some of this stuff and she was thinking, where is this coming from? You know.
I wanted to ask, you know, at the talk that you gave last year. You know, I think the title was like New Nigerian Fiction or something. How does that title suit you? I mean, because New Nigerian, I didn't really understand what they meant by New Nigerian Fiction when they wrote it. I wanted to ask, in Nigeria, is there like a surge of new Nigerian writers, or is it just that we're now getting it? Nigerian writers are now just getting through to, I guess, the UK and whatnot.
I feel like it's a bit of both. So I also work as an editor for Literary Magazine. We get a lot of Nigerian submissions. And I think towards the end of last year, we sort of told ourselves, we have to be conscious about the number of Nigerians we publish. Because there's so many. So I do feel, my sense is that there is a surge. Even in terms of not necessarily even people who've published books, but people who are writing short stories, writing essays. There's quite a number of Nigerian stories that are making their way into the world. Say, outside of the continent, in Europe, in America, and all of that. So I feel like it's difficult to judge a moment in that moment, which was the thing with the contemporaries question. Yeah. I feel like we're going to look back in 20 years and be able to have a more accurate sense of what is happening. But right now, instinctively, I feel like, there's a lot of Nigerians writing right now, and quite a number of books are getting a lot of attention internationally.
Yeah. Have you ever read a piece of fiction that's describing Nigeria and just thought to yourself, this isn't Nigeria?
Let me see. I think I have. But I think this is also probably because a lot of what I read about Nigeria is about by Nigerians.
Right, okay.
So
it will be authentic in a way.
Yeah. And then also there's a sense that it's such a large and massive country.
Yes.
That I feel like there's a lot I need to learn about it too. So that even if I read something by a Nigerian, probably from another part of the country that I don't necessarily recognize, there's still something about it that feels true.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I feel that sometimes it's a question of perspective. Mm. It's a question of whether you feel like someone is writing down at a people or writing about a people,
I get that.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It makes sense. Okay.
I don't know. I obviously coming from an East African perspective, a lot of the books that are termed African lit, in my perspective, are from Nigerian authors or that are marketed well.
Guilty as charged.
Like completely. And obviously that's a whole different debate, but from my perspective, I think Nigerian authors are doing absolutely amazing with getting their works out to the rest of the world. And I think the rest of the world looks at African narratives and the first thing they'll think about are is West Nigeria. Africa.
Well, I mean, there's 100 million of them.
Exactly.
I think it's over 120 million.
Oh,
it's
really?
Really? In the diaspora, like outside?
Like
no, in Nigeria.
In Nigeria, okay.
Yeah, so I also say that. When I'm elsewhere on the continent and people say, okay, all the night. There's a lot of us, actually.
Exactly. Okay, cool. Well, just rounding off that section. Obviously, Stay With Me is out now in paperback, isn't it? So this is your second time in the UK?
No. So I did an MA year.
Oh, wow.
Based
okay.
of East Anglia.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, they have an amazing creative writing.
A number of times.
Like,
it's really good. Yeah. It was really a good program. And I've been back a number of times, actually.
Oh, right. Okay. Enjoy it.
Yeah.
I can imagine. Is London very different from Lagos, or is it the same rush?
Oh, it's very different.
Yeah.
I feel like they're both very busy, intense cities. But there's no place like Lagos. There just isn't.
I can imagine.
I was going to go in the summer for a wedding, but then I cancelled it because I want to go to New Orleans.
You should still come sometime.
Yeah, I think I will.
I have to go one day. One day I have to go. Yeah. But so just rounding up, moving on to my gem.
Your gem, yeah.
My gem quickly. I've actually found one this week. It's been a couple of weeks where I haven't had one. My gem this week is a book called The Beautiful Ones Are Not Yet Born by Ei Kweyama.
This is a book I should have mentioned.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
This is one of the books I would have been thinking about tonight. Yeah. So thank you. It's really
good. Yeah. See, the thing is, it's my gem. But I haven't finished it.
I read it so many times. Really? The spine, I mean, it fell off.
Oh, like, wow.
I mean, it's just, I have a copy. I mean, it's underlined. Mm. It is so good.
I struggle because he's such a detailed writer.
You know the Chichidodo and the maggot. Oh my god!
There's just it's, it. I mean, when I'm reading it, the thing is with that book, once you get into the flow, then you're there. Do you know what I mean?
Give the synopsis to.
What I've read so far. No, yeah. So if you could give us a synopsis, because you've read all of it.
So yeah. it's about it's set in Ghana, mm-hmm. and it's about a man. Simply called The Man, mm-hmm. if I remember very well.
Yeah.
It's called The Man. And it is in this environment where there's so much corruption and he's trying to keep himself untainted by it.
Ah.
And Ama uses this bird as a sort of image that goes through the book. Mm-hmm. I think he calls it the Chichidodo. And it's a bird that feeds on maggots but doesn't like fecal matter. If I can use that.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating. So it's really newly independent Ghana,
mm-hmm.
and sort of how that dream of a wonderful, you know, we're finally free from colonialism and everything is going to be wonderful. It's how that dream sort of becomes corrupted in a way.
Oh, it reminds me.
It is really good.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Reminds me.
So, I mean, because I remember when I first tried to read it about 3 years ago and I got about 50 pages through and then I stopped. Then I started again and then I got to I think 75 pages then I stopped then I started again but
Wait,
I kept going
now?
I kept I'm about 100 pages now I kept going back to the beginning and each time I went back it got easier and easier because I wasn't really when I first started reading it I wasn't really much of a reader so it was really because there's so many layers so much depth
oh my god to the book. It's a very deep book.
Yeah, very, very deep book. And obviously, I just wanted to read something about Ghana. So I came, I think that was probably a bad place to start. Even though it's amazing, you know, being new to reading.
I might get it. I like sort of books that look at systems and it reminds me of Anthills of the Savannah, which I like.
Yeah, that's also a good
book. But it's so much more than that. I mean, it's a difficult book.
I read this book. I have to go and look for that copy and underlined and made notes and it literally fell apart because I was reading it so much.
Well, what's the book and who wrote it?
It's called The Beautiful Ones Are Not Yet Born by, oh my God, I've forgotten his name
again. Ayikwe Ama.
That's it, Ayikwe Ama.
Perfect. Cool. My issue is actually a book that I also want to recommend.
Raise issue.
So the issue is a book. The only issue is that I also haven't finished it and I keep going back and forth. Like every time I want to finish it or every time I go back to it, I start from the beginning. And it's Under the Udala Trees by Chinelo Oparanta. Was that right? And just to give you a brief synopsis, it's apparently inspired by like Nigeria's folktales and wars. And it's literally about this girl called Ijeoma.
Wait, why is this your issue?
It's not an issue.
Oh.
That's why I said I'm like, it's my section, but I don't have an issue.
So you're just going to give a book. Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
And listen, man. And so, you know, this girl called Ijeoma who comes of age during like, there's lots of war going on, basically. I mean, there's always a war somewhere. But it's in Nigeria, obviously. And she's sent away and she meets another young child and they just like really fall in love, I guess. And they're both from different ethnic minorities and it's all about that sort of play and that dialogue and how they deal with it in that time. I really love the writing. I think the writing is stellar. The writing always captures me, and so right now I'm just trying to stay in it, but I would really, really, really recommend reading it. And I think it really ties in with like sort of the diasporic reading in like African reading that we're talking about.
Have you read Happiness Like Water?
No.
Which is Chinelo's collection of short stories.
Yeah,
she's really good too.
Okay, I'm gonna write that down.
Yeah,
what's that called?
Happiness Like Water.
Okay,
it's a collection of short stories.
Yeah,
it's really brilliant.
Might give that a read.
Thank you. Well, come to the end of the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
We finally got you here.
I know. I feel like We need another. It's either we turn Stay With Me into a blockbuster. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to get the role of...
Would
I like to
who
be
Who would
here
you
today?
Want to be?
Who would you want to be?
Oh, man. Oh, I'll be Fumi because...
Oh my god.
She just showed up at my man's salon like our husband. I was like, what?
Do you know what? Yeah, I have time for Fumi, you know. She was patient.
She was patient.
She had a plan.
She was very strategic.
She was.
I was even sad when she, you know.
She came in and she had a plan.
Yeah, she had a plan. She knew what she was doing. She said, our husband.
Yeah.
I felt sick, but I feel like I could carry that well.
Yeah.
I feel like I have the time to do that. And I could wear the little heels all over the house.
Was it, quickly before we go, was there any character in the book that you was writing and you just like, I hate this guy? Or I hate her?
Daughter?
I say guy because the men are just absolute trash
in the
book.
Yeah, the men are trash in this book. It's like,
with Aki in particular, I feel like I understand him. I get him.
Yeah. You try to give him a soul.
I think he has one.
I think he does, yeah.
He does.
I mean, I don't agree with him. I think...
He was trying to, like, be like absent.
He's not ready to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And how can you be loved if you're not ready to be vulnerable? Yeah. You know, so that's one of his problems, of which there are many. But who did I hate in this book? You know, it's difficult for me to write about people I hate.
Mm.
I feel like I start out really hating them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how I started out with Hacking, that, oh, you're just nonsense.
Mm.
And then I spend 5 years with you and I'm like, okay.
I get you.
I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, I thought
even the mother-in-law, because I feel like for me, I just need to have, even if you appear for a moment, I need to have your motivation.
Mm.
And you did something terrible. I might still think that what you did is awful, but I need to just know why are you this way.
What about Ayamatha? You thought she was cool?
No, yeah, she was terrible.
Yes.
She was terrible. Okay, finally, I found somebody. She was awful, yeah.
She was awful, absolutely. Yeah.
I really hated Fumi at the beginning.
Because
I was like, wow, like, you should be grateful to be here, okay?
So
this woman invited you into her life without killing you.
I felt that way about her initially.
Yeah.
And then, while I was writing this novel, I wrote a whole short story about her. Nobody will ever see it.
Oh, man, I was really going to be like, oh, can you email it to us?
So I wrote this thing about how mommy comes to meet her and why she decides to be a second wife.
Mm.
So these are just little exercises I do because I want to understand, why would you do this to yourself?
Mm.
You know, like...
Yeah, I've had that.
That's really interesting. So you write little stories for the characters
that
and then...
That is really cool.
That is interesting.
That's a nice little technique. Mm. I thought the relationship between mommy and Yejide was very complex. I was a bit like, one minute you love this woman and the next minute she's doing all of these things and you have to remain...
Mm.
You know, there's this facade that a woman has to put up, you know, when
there's
people came to her house.
Exactly,
people come to her house, oh, you have to offer a room. And I totally get that. I was literally like, this happens in my house. Like, my mum knows she'll invite somebody who she absolutely hates. You know, they'll come round and it's, let's get the drinks for you. You know, what would you like? Oh, no, I just prepared a meal. You know, it's
just
fine.
Just for you.
Just for you. That play, that facade, that, you know, the niceties and the social etiquettes that you have to put up is exhausting, but
yeah, it's exhausting. In some ways, it's a way to survive. In a situation where you don't have as much power as you would like to have, that you find all these ways to sort of bend the situation as much or make the best of it, as much as you can.
Yeah.
Well,
cool.
On that note.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. This has been fun.
It has been fun, yeah. And Stay With Me is out now in paperback from Canongate Books as well.
Please, guys, go and read it. You will not be disappointed. Where can they find you on, like, your social medias?
So Twitter is Ayobami Adebayo.
Mm-hmm. Are you an Instagram girl?
On Instagram. And it's Ayobami Adebayo. So the second A is not there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I have a Facebook page, which I don't manage.
Mm.
Yeah.
Everyone does this stuff. Like, yeah, I got Twitter. I have Instagram. Yeah. Facebook. Mm.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for coming. Honestly, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to accommodate us. Where can we find Mostly Lit, Derek?
Find Mostly Lit on Twitter, at Mostly Lit Pod on Instagram. You can find me at Ghanaian Derek, and you can find Ray at
Reckless Ray.
And Alex at I'm Alex Reads.
Yep. Please make sure to subscribe onto the iTunes. Please leave comments. And we always read the comments. Like, we actually do. And email us at mostlylit@gmail.com. So,
thanks, guys.
See you guys next time. Bye. Bye-bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.